and welcome to the GEMS podcast, GPod, the podcast that educates you about all things GEMS and how to make the most of your medical aid. I'm Yuveka Rangapan, and in this episode today, we have the GEMS internal audit team. Very important people. These are the people who provide assurance on risk management and governance elements of the scheme. Well, on today's panel, we are joined by three very special people. Mr. Bongani Bango, GEMS Senior Manager, Internal Audit. Say hi.
And then we've
got Vanessa Ngwenya Ndlovu, GEMS Senior Manager, Internal Audit Finance and Operations. Sounds very important. And then Ms. Janine Jewel Noons, but because we besties, she says I can call her Jules, GEMS Senior Manager, Internal Forensics. Welcome, everybody, and thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
So, Vanessa, we get to start with you. So you're the most important person. Does that mean that? All right. Well, we want to talk about the primary mandate of an internal audit function. It sounds very important. It's so wordy in an organization like yours. What is the primary mandate?
So the GEMS internal audit primary mandate is to provide objective and independent assurance to the scheme. So we help the organization achieve its objective by evaluating the adequacy and effectiveness of governance, risk management, and internal controls. Our mandate is stated in our audit charter. So our audit charter is like our Bible. So when the poopoo hits the fan, we produce our mandate. Yeah, that's our Bible.
It's there. It's black and white.
Yes.
This is the law.
Yes, basically. Right. Yeah. So the authority, everything is stated there.
So I suppose independence is very important, Bongani. So why is the independence of the internal audit and forensic function so critical then?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a key. It forms, you know, the basis of how we operate. We find ourselves as part of the organization, but yet we say we are independent. And the reason why it is key for us to be independent is such that our results are reliable and there's no due influence from management. And that's the key reason why it's quintessential, if I can put it that way.
Well, it might be a bit tricky because how do you maintain that kind of independence when you are auditing like your seniors, your senior leadership or departments that have significant influence within the organization, basically those who can get you fired?
Yeah. Interesting. Look, there are safeguards for that.
Yeah.
So which is driven by our charter. It's embodied in our charter. Mm. So what basically happens there is that the way we report, we then report directly to the audit committee, and then we report dotted line to our executives, like for instance the PO, and that is just mainly for administrative issues such as leave or things that we do in the organization. Otherwise, the part of our work, the core element of our work, would then report that to the audit committee, and that is how we make sure we maintain that independence, and we always unfiltered access to the audit committee to report anything that we see, without fear or favor or being stopped by the executives.
You're really well protected.
Yeah.
Okay. I suppose we have to understand then, and I think Jules, this one is for you. What exactly is fraud in the context of what you do and the organization you work for?
That's a very good question. And in a lot of the trainings that I do, that's one of the main things that a lot of the employees ask. So in layman terms, not to use the dictionary, it's basically where somebody intentionally does something, either against an act or a policy, in order to gain either personal or financial benefit. So it's when you basically go against any company's policies or legislation and you know that you're intentionally doing it because you're then depriving GEMS from something because somebody else or yourself is going to get a benefit from it. So that in layman terms is what I can explain fraud is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Vanessa, I mean, you know, How can internal auditors ensure that they remain objective during this kind of work? Because you work with people for many years, you develop relationships, you develop friendships, some of them for decades. So how do you remain objective, especially if something might involve one of them?
So as internal auditors, we get trained on objectivity and independence. And at any given point, we must declare any conflict of interest to ensure that our opinions at the end of the day are unbiased. So in instances where we declare a conflict, a possible conflict, then from management point of view, we have to manage that. Similarly to Jules. So when Jules is given a case to investigate that involves maybe our boss or one of our colleagues, she has to recuse herself. She has to get an independent panel to come in. So even with us, we have to make sure that at any given point, we are independent and objective, because you don't want the results of the work to be questioned from a biased point of view. Also, we perform our reviews from an evidence-based. They are evidence-based because at some point in time, you might be called in to maybe in a court of law, you know, to give evidence on what you've reviewed. So you must always make sure that you don't get into politics. Mm. You remove yourself from politics. You base your conclusion on facts.
That's when you say, I'm not at work to make friends. Is that that point? Right. So that independent sort of panel of auditors that you're talking about, would they be the people who actually keep an eye on you? Because the question is, who audits the auditors or the internal audit function? Who does that?
Not necessarily. Mm. So the independent function is there to supplement us. So from an internal forensics point of view, they are there to take on those cases where there could be possible conflict or where Jules does not have the capacity. In our case, we also have an internal audit panel. They also can supplement us, or they can try and cover the gap where we believe that there might be a potential conflict. So in terms of who audits the auditors, we have an internal QA function that audits us on a regular basis.
QA function.
So it's a quality assurance function, yes. And the quality assurance manager doesn't report to any of the senior managers. Yeah. So they report directly to the chief audit executive. And on a five-yearly basis, we get now quality reviewed by an independent external party that looks at our files. So all the results of the independent quality assurance get reported at the audit committee.
So, Bongani, I want to know more about this audit committee that Vanessa just talked about. What role does this committee actually play in safeguarding the independence and objectivity of internal audit? I mean, how far does that extend the committee's duty and job?
Thank you for that. So the internal audit committee is a subcommittee of the board. And their responsibility is to approve our charters, provide us with the powers that we have, and also look at the work that we do and give us direction on the areas that they want us to cover. And then we go and report back to them. And they are also responsible for appointing the chief audit executive, who at the end of the day, in as much as they report administratively to the PO, they would, the chief audit executive would report back to the audit committee. So they look after our independence through approved documents, and also look at the periodic work that we report to them on a regular basis, whether we're still in line with what they require. Because at the end of the day, they're also responsible to report into the board based on what they've been mandated to do.
All right, Jules, now for the juicy stuff. I want to know about all the different types of fraud, like the common types of fraud. What are people trying to do to hoodwink you out there?
Okay, so according to the ACFE, which is Associated Certified Fraud Examiners, that is basically an association that looks after all forensic practitioners, and on a yearly basis, they do statistics. So there's three types of frauds, which is your asset misappropriation, it's your corruption, and then it's your financial statement fraud. So when people see fraud, they think it's just fraud, but actually fraud is broken into three parts. And the most common fraud based on the latest statistics issued by the ACFE is your asset misappropriation, funny enough, which means that anybody, an employee or an executive, is given an asset, so your laptop, for example, or access to a printer, and you basically misuse it or you either steal it.
So asset, or sell it.
Yeah, one of the two things. So funny enough, asset misappropriation is actually one of the most common frauds at the moment. You would think that financial statement fraud was the biggest, but no, funny enough, it's not. Even corruption, I'm assuming that maybe if you look at the different, globally, you know, your different countries, for example, they would obviously have the most common types of fraud, but globally, asset misappropriation is the most common type of fraud at this moment.
Interesting stuff. And when, imagine when you nab that person, I can just imagine the feeling. Bongani, now, how does the internal audit function align with the actual broader governance and risk management framework of your organization?
So what we, our role then comes in is we provide assurance on the elements of risk management and the governance in the organization. You'd understand governance is very broad. It just forms the basis of which and rules and policies of which the organization on. So what we do in hindsight with our independence is just to make sure that the organization is aligning to those policies. So we do that assurance. Mm. So in that sense, what we would then go independently and see that, you know, usually you get your first line, second line, and line and third line defense. Your first line, which is management, are they doing their activities based on the policies that they've been put in the organization? And you'd understand policies are put so that you can achieve the objectives of the organization. So we then go and do that checking, and that's how we provide assurance. At the end of the day, then produce reports to say, we believe that either management is aligning to the policies, or there are gaps, or there are areas of improvement that can be done, so that at the end of the day, we are able to achieve the objectives of the organization. And that's basically aligning to the governance of
that sounds like a lot of work. Do you have to do this every day? Every month? Every year?
It's exciting.
Glad you think so. Tell me how exciting, Vanessa, because, I mean, how do internal auditors actually deal with, say, potential conflicts of interest within the audits? And then what would be an example of a conflict of interest, if you can give us one as well?
So basically, for example, if there is a relative that works in the organization, and I have to go perform an audit in that function.
Your relative?
Yes.
Okay.
Then that's a perceived conflict of interest that has to be managed. Even if I can attest and say, no, I'm going to be independent and unbiased, but the fact that there is my relative or a close friend that works in that function, then there's perceived bias. So then I have to declare. And then I have to be recused from that audit to maintain the objectivity and independence of the function. So then someone else has to be brought in. So then any of the managers as well have to go in and review the work that was performed.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're keeping an eye on each other in that case.
Yes.
All right. And now we get back to sort of combating fraud. And I'm loving your job, Jules. I mean, let's talk about technology playing what role it actually plays in combating fraud, because so much is happening at the moment, aren't there, in that space?
Definitely. As technology is evolving, so is fraud. And as businesses are also evolving, so does the fraud. So with regards to technology and specifically within GEMS, we're trying to rely a lot more on data analytics as well as CATS. We call it continuous control monitoring. So this is basically a tool that we're trying to implement across GEMS where it will pick up trends and anomalies. And those are the ones that will probably highlight a potential red flags, which those are what we basically ask management and we go and investigate. So because technology is evolving so much, we have to rely on advanced tools and practices, especially within GEMS. As you know, fraudsters are now using emails and technology.
And
I mean, definitely. Yeah. So you got your phishing, vishing, and smishing, which has evolved quite a lot. And it's all driven to try and take information from you so that they can use it in a fraudulent way. So, you know, even your hacking, your cybercrime, that's also quite prevalent at the moment. You'll hear a lot in the news, a lot of cybercrime attacks, especially within government parastatals, where, you know, they're asking for ransom money. So as fraud evolves, so do we need to evolve as well. And within GEMS, we try and identify the latest trends of what is happening out there. And we try and write articles and publish them on a quarterly basis and share it with the staff. As you know, our staff are our front line of defense. They are our ears and eyes. Unfortunately, in audit, we're only the third line of defense. So we only see things after they've happened. So we always try and educate our staff as much as we can so that they can prevent and see things before it actually happens.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be on top of everything because these guys are always one step ahead.
Always one step ahead.
And I often say, if they took that skill and actually did something good with it, can you imagine how much good we would could do in the world? Bongani, can an internal audit function be truly independent if it reports to the CFO or other senior executives?
Yes, it can be, but I think your best practices out there is to limit the reporting of internal audit to executives, because what it basically says is executives are the first line of defense. And if I can give an example, let's say we are reporting to the CFO, we are required to do a project in the CFO's office, and then we come up with adverse findings. That becomes very difficult for the CFO to probably accept, because all he does is says, whatever you're supposed to do, you're not doing well. And and at the same time, you're being told by someone that reports to you. So you're probably going to be urged to try and quash them so that that information does not come. So the best practice is to ensure that internal audit reports independently from the frontline section. Like, the best way would be have it to report to the audit committee and administrative probably to the CFO.
And Vanessa, I mean, if you can come in on that one as well, how does the internal audit function handle situations where management might disagree with the audit findings or recommendations? If it puts you in that kind of position.
Yeah, I think that's our daily bread. You know, we often don't bring good news, although we try and
balance. When they see you, they know it's bad news.
Yeah. So we often try and balance, but you have to have good negotiation skills and you have to highlight the risks. So management, because in some instances, findings are used as part of performance management. So you can just imagine when you go report to someone and tell them that you've got so many findings, and then start thinking about their bonus. You know, they're not going to receive those news well. So you have to try and show them the bigger picture. Because remember when you spoke about our mandate, is to assist the organization achieve its objectives. So whatever that we report on and we raise is to still try and assist you to achieve that those objectives, because then we're saying, here are the red flags.
Yeah.
You know, try and fix them before it's too late, so that you can still have an opportunity to achieve your objectives. So you negotiate with them and you show them that if you don't address the issues that we are raising, this is the impact. And this is the likelihood in which it will impact you as a function or as GEMS, as an organization. So we help management try and close all the gaps in order to achieve their objectives. So that's how you would negotiate and say, let's look at the bigger picture. If we don't address the issues of financial sustainability, it could impact us in that tomorrow you might not be paid.
Yeah.
So they have to see the bigger picture.
Well, that's all you have to say. You might not be paid, and that's it. And you bring it home.
You bring it home. Yes. Yeah.
We're all not going to get paid.
Yes.
Food parcels for everyone. So, I mean, and I'm glad you mentioned red flags, because coming back to you, Jules, in terms of fraud, what are the red flags? I mean, what are you seeing? What indicates to you that something is not right? Someone's trying to do something.
Yes, that's a very good question. And I get asked that quite a bit as well from management. And I know it's going to sound like a cliche, but when you can see that an employee is living beyond their means, I mean, that is a true reflection of a red flag, when you know that someone is a junior staff member
and they're
driving, yes, yeah, or going on luxurious holidays, and they're putting it on Facebook.
With their fancy handbag. Yeah.
Yeah. The genuine one, not the fake
yeah,
one.
The genuine one.
Then, I mean, that is definitely a red flag. Also, another instance is when employees don't want to go on leave, because they know that if they go on leave, someone's going to come and do their roles, their responsibilities. Chances are that you'll pick up that there's something funny.
Oh, I'd rather go on leave. But anyway. Yeah.
So that's another one. Also, when you pick up patterns where a person's behavior starts changing, when they become more secretive, they want to operate more in the silos, they don't want you to get involved in what they do in their daily functions and responsibilities. Those are generally the red flags that you would pick up. Also, when you hear chatter, I know with us as colleagues, we talk a lot to each other. And you'd also pick up, for example, where someone's, you know, under financial burden, financial strain. That's a concern as well, mm-hmm, that you need to be worried about when you hear that someone is, quite a bit in debt, because then they're pushed in particular situations or corners where they have to try and find themselves a way of getting out of it, either through, fraudulent transactions or colluding with a service provider, bribery, etc. So, yeah.
So you've got to have your ears to the ground, your eyes open. That must not make you the most popular person in the building. They probably run when they see you coming. They're like, let's go hide and eat our lunch in the toilet. I don't know.
Yeah, as an FYI, I don't really get many people that sit next to me. But anyway.
Oh, shame. I'll be your friend, Jules. It's okay. You can come sit next to me the next time. So, I mean, and we spoke a little bit about it earlier, but how has fraud evolved over time? You spoke about the different methods just a short while ago. But in terms of evolving and the different methods that they're using, and also ways that even the most intelligent people are getting caught, the most cautious people are getting caught.
So now, I mean, with the 21st century that we're looking at and the change in the AI and technology, we are now facing situations where they're using AI quite a lot. So I've heard of an incident, thank goodness, not at GEMS, where they used AI to represent to mask themselves as the CFO, even the voice to such an extent. They actually joined a Teams meeting and they instructed staff to release specific payments. Staff thought that they were actually talking to the CFO.
So they created this
completely,
meeting, sent the invites and everything. Wow.
Completely.
Okay. All right.
So with AI, unfortunately, in a way, it helps the person who's using it in the proper way. But for a fraudster, you can always use AI in such a way that you can commit fraud and people actually believe that, the information or the emails that you're receiving is genuine.
Yeah.
So we've got to always be on top of things. And like I said, through our technology and tools that we have to instill at GEMS in order to put things in place and controls in order to prevent fraud from happening.
And also to make sure that there's no inside info. And that also must be a bit of a challenge, because they're getting the information from somewhere.
Agreed.
And is that sort of the latest trend, is the use of AI in this?
Very
or
much
are there
so.
Others as well?
And I think also probably data leaks or information leaks, let me rather say, where they get specific information from individuals and then they can obviously use the AI in such an advanced way in order to commit the fraud. So, yeah, it's a big challenge, and it's something that I think many organizations find it difficult, and everyone's just trying to be a step ahead, you know, attending various conferences, you know, around fraud specifically, like the ACFE conferences, ICFP, reading the latest things in the articles as well, working very closely with your ICT guys within the cybersecurity space as well. That's all one can hope for. And then obviously training your staff, which is very important, where they pick up certain suspicious, you know, emails or something that they can then, you know, just check with you and say, is this legit or not legit?
So what does somebody do? What is the process if you suspect fraud, if you think something fishy is going on here?
That's a very good question. So what I do say to, or in our training to staff that have asked me that, I would say the first thing you do is you need to document your observation. Be very detailed in what you're seeing, dates, times, places, individuals. Then the second thing that I would do is make copies, you know, gather as much information as you possibly can, evidence, make copies of that. Because when you do phone the whistle hotline, for example, James has one.
You have a whistleblower hotline.
Yes, we do, which is run by an independent organization. You can phone through and they'll ask you a series of questions, and then you can obviously send that information to them. All that information will help the forensic investigator to understand the nature, the scope, the time and the sequence of events and who the perpetrators are. GEMS also has a, so if you don't want to use the hotline, GEMS also has the option where you can report the crime to someone that you feel more confident with. Mm-hmm. So for example, your line manager, your chief, the internal audit, the forensic unit as well. And then we also have policies in place. So if staff want to know how to report or they want to get an understanding of how they're protected, for example, there's also the policies that we have, fraud and corruption policy, which they can use to read up on.
Safely without being victimized as them, I think. Okay, because that's always a concern.
Very much so.
Wow.
So those are my key things is obviously gather as much evidence and information that you can. Because that will definitely help the investigation.
Solid information.
Yes. It also prevent an allegation appearing to be suspicious because now you're basing it on facts. And it helps the case.
Okay, well, Vanessa Bongani and Jules, certainly I would never want to trade my job for yours. Firstly, I'll have no friends and I'll be eating my lunch alone. But thank you so much for sharing. And I think it's very comforting to know that there are people like you who do those things so that even members are kept safe in a way as well, because if you suffer, they suffer. Yeah, thank you very much for the work that you do, I suppose, on behalf of GEMS members everywhere. Thank you so much for joining us on GPod. Till the next time.